This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Jake Auchincloss is the newest and youngest member of the Massachusetts Congressional Delegation. He represents 4th District, and he's been on the job for about 3.5 weeks. Now, you know that we speak regularly with members of our delegation here on Radio Boston, so we wanted to get to know our newest representative, and he is joining us. And he's going to take some calls. So if you have questions on the stimulus bill, vaccines, the economy, you can call 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Congressman Jake Auchincloss, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
So almost a month now, I'm sure you went into the job eyes wide open, but anytime we start something new, something surprises us. What has been surprising about the job for you?
Quite an orientation, huh? My colleague from New York, Richie Torres, noted that our first Wednesday was an insurrection, our second Wednesday was an impeachment, our third Wednesday was an inauguration, and this is our fourth Wednesday, so I don't know what's going to happen before close of business,
but
it's going to be exciting. I think you're right that I went into it eyes wide open. I was unfortunately not surprised that there was a mob on the Capitol steps. I was unfortunately not surprised that so many of the Republicans in Congress refused to demonstrate moral leadership. I was and remain stunned at the complete failure of Capitol security that allowed for the insurrection to breach Capitol grounds, and there must be accountability about both misconduct as well as potential collusion, no matter how high up it reaches.
So you said you weren't surprised by the mob on the Capitol steps. A lot of people were. So why were you not?
Well, because the former president and his enablers had been telegraphing it on social media for months. They were inciting insurrection openly. They have been blowing on this dog whistle, not even a dog whistle, really now a bullhorn, for years. They have been fomenting this type of white supremacist grievance, and January 6th was clearly going to be the climactic moment.
You know, I want to play some sound. You just talked about a remarkable three Wednesdays, right? I mean, that's incredible. That's got to be a first for somebody just starting in Congress. And on one of those Wednesdays, you gave your first speech on the House floor 2 weeks ago, supporting the second impeachment of then-President Trump. You co-sponsored the resolution to impeach. Here's a little bit of what you said.
Immediate impeachment is our duty under a Constitution that compels us to defend against enemies foreign and domestic. As a Marine officer, I defended our democracy from foreign enemies. As a member of Congress, I am solemnly resolved to defend it from domestic ones.
I am sure as a Marine officer, former Marine, you don't take those words lightly. So who are, in your mind, our domestic enemies?
Well, those who breached the Capitol grounds are a very good exemplar of them. They are those who, one, reject the Constitution as the supreme law of the land and who seek to insert, instead of the rule of law, the rule of demagogues and would-be fascists. And they are, unfortunately, those who are installed in elective office who aided and abetted those insurrectionists, including, unfortunately, members of Congress and even the president himself. There are people who...
So I do want to stop you there for a second, because, I mean, that's a really serious thing you just said. So you believe that there are elected officials in the U.S. Congress who are currently domestic enemies.
People who directly incite political violence are leaving the guardrails of constitutional democracy. I welcome good faith, vigorous debate on all issues. That's what people send us to Congress to do. But we need to have clear red lines as a democracy about what behavior is acceptable and what behavior is not acceptable. And it's not acceptable to cross from debate and even passion, vigorous debate into a directly inciting political violence. And that's what happened.
Are you ready to take a call? There's plenty more for us to talk about, but calls are coming in. Shall we go
sure.
to the phones real quick? So we've got Greg on the line from Duxbury. Greg, go ahead. You are on with Congressman Jake Auchincloss.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I have a question, Congressman. Is there any way of doing a dual-party commission to prove that the election was not stolen? I think if there was actual, I don't know how to say if the right word is proof, but if I thought the election was stolen, I'd be very upset myself. I wouldn't break into the Congress, but I'd be very upset. I don't believe the election's been stolen, but I think there has to be a way, if it was a bipartisan commission, to prove it. I think, you know, it might quell some bad feelings.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
Here's the approach I would take to that, is that actually a bipartisan commission to investigate, that what that implies is that there are facts in question. There actually really are not facts in question. Numerous courts of law and many elected officials, including many Republicans at the state level, have said repeatedly in multiple forums that this was a free and fair election. I mean, we have now vetted this election more thoroughly than any election in the history of the United States. And repeatedly what has come back is that not only was this free and fair, but by many metrics, this was one of the freest and fairest ever. What we need is not a commission. What we need is Republican leadership in this country to demonstrate the moral leadership of saying to their base, this president was lying to you. This was an election that represented the will of the people. And in democracies, we accept defeat and we work in good faith with the incoming administration, like I will say Senator Mitt Romney did, to his credit.
So I'm just going to put the number back out so callers can call in if they also have questions. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to move on to some specific policy areas. But before we do, just the last question on this broader subject. So today, the Department of Homeland Security issued a bulletin warning of a, quote, heightened threat environment, unquote, in the wake of the insurrection, the inauguration. You know, so there is business to be done in this new Congress on urgent, immediate issues, the pandemic, our suffering economy. At the same time, there's real business at hand in effectively handling these threats, addressing the concerns you just raised about colleagues in Congress. I mean, that's going to affect our ability to work. Impeachment of the president, of the former president of the United States. Can Congress do it all?
Yes. And I think Americans absolutely should hold Congress to account for both holding a president to account for unlawful actions, as well as governing in the midst of crisis. American families, people in the Massachusetts 4th, have been juggling just unimaginable responsibilities and obligations over the last year. Asking Congress to do both its constitutional job and its governing job at the same time is not unreasonable.
So let's talk about some of that work. One of the biggest things on the table right now is more economic relief, pandemic relief, financial relief. One of the hot button issues is this issue of payments to families, whether it's low income families or a broader set of families. $600 payments were sent out this month to qualifying Americans. President Biden has proposed $1,400. But there are lawmakers saying that's too much, and there are others saying it's not enough. We spoke with your colleague, Ayanna Pressley, on Friday. She wants $2,000 recurring cash payments. Where is the number for you, and is it the number you think we can get to in Congress to put that money in people's hands?
So I broadly support President Biden's approach here. And what I am concerned about is getting a number that we get passed as quickly as possible, because the need is acute and urgent. And we don't want to let perfect be the enemy of the good. Let's get cash into people's pockets, especially lower income families who are really struggling right now with a host of obligations. And let's also, and this to me is just as important, get relief to state and local governments. Local governments, especially the 34 in my city, in my district, are going to face a fiscal year coming up that will present really impossible trade-offs between public safety, education, human and social services, and painful cuts are coming if we don't provide relief. So let's get something across the finish line and get money into government and people's pockets.
What are the other big needs for the 4th this year in your mind?
It begins with COVID, as it must everywhere in the country. And there are really two elements of that I'm focused on. The first, and this is obviously quite salient today, is we've got to vaccinate more people faster. There are then two elements of that. One is sort of the logistics, the signups, the sites, the number of people to do it. It's been a little rocky at the beginning of that, but ultimately, actually, I'm less concerned about the logistics, which I'm confident the state can handle, than I am about the supply. We can have the best logistics distribution system in the world, but if we don't have the supply, it's moot. And the supply is not big enough. We're getting about 85,000 a week. That might go up to north of 100,000 in February. Back of the napkin math will tell anybody who's listening that that's just not enough, not fast enough to get this state where it needs to be. And so we have got to
do.
We've got to do a host of things. So Johnson & Johnson's approval is going to go a long way. They're saying they can bring a billion doses this year, and those are single doses. So that's going to be incredibly important. We can use the Defense Production Act to boost the supply of the non actual biomedical elements like the syringes and the plastics. That will help. And then just having competent government at the federal level in the White House goes a long way. I mean, the Trump administration left a complete shambles behind, and just having people who are invested in actually doing this the right way and having science and public health be in the driver's seat is going to be an enormous issue. I just want to quickly touch on, though, that the second big aspect of this, there's vaccinations, more people faster, but then there's also testing. And I've really made testing, especially for public schools in the district, the flagship issue for me in the first couple of months since the election. We are going to need robust testing infrastructure for our public schools, I believe, for at least the next 18 months. And that means every public school should have access to free weekly surveillance testing of all teachers, staff, students, and getting that in place.
You mean like pooled testing, yes?
Exactly. That's really going to be the enabler for full in-person learning, which to me is an issue with both moral and economic dimensions.
And how soon do you think we could be back into full in-person learning?
That's really predicated on how soon we can scale up surveillance COVID testing. And that's underway right now. DESE, the state agency for education, has launched a program to do surveillance testing for public schools for 6 weeks. And I've been very involved in making sure that the school districts in my district are signed up for that and set up for success. But it needs to be, I mean, it needed to be happening a while ago, but it definitely needs to be happening now.
And just for listeners' sake, pooled testing is a group of people swab. The tests are processed together. If something in the pool comes up positive, then they go back and do individual testing to figure out who it was. How about another call, Congressman? Are you ready for one more?
Yes.
Okay, we've got Kyle on the line from Waltham. Kyle, go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call. Congressman, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on the Electoral College. At the risk of sounding like I'm complaining, I know that Democrats have kind of taken it on the chin twice in the past two decades. I don't consider myself a Democrat. I am a bleeding heart liberal. I'm a big Bernie supporter. And I don't feel like my vote is necessarily being heard in Massachusetts. So I just wanted to see what your thoughts were on the Electoral College and if you think it should be abolished or if you.
I think we lost Kyle at the end there, but I'll turn it back over to you, Congressman.
Maybe an unusual thing for a politician to say, but the truth is I'm really still debating this issue. I have a great amount of respect and deference for the Constitution, and there's a high bar for me always to change elements of our politics that have been with us since the founding, because it's served us well as a country overall. However, it does feel like this is really not working anymore. 7 million votes separated Joe Biden and Donald Trump, but he just squeaked by in terms of the electoral votes he needed. If you look at the actual state counts, we're getting to a place where we may be undermining the democratic legitimacy of our national elections. And we need to go in eyes wide open to abolishing the Electoral College, because that will have some downstream effects that could make campaigns more expensive, for example. It could change the way that campaigns are run in ways that may not be as inclusive. So we need to understand the ramifications here. But this is an issue I'm actively wrestling with, and I'm trying to read and canvass opinion far and wide on it.
All right, so we've got limited time left. I want to go back to vaccines for a minute. We were talking about it before the call. You made a sort of an oblique reference to the challenges being experienced by people today trying to register for vaccinations. We're going to cover that after the break. But I did want to ask you, are you hearing from constituents today? And if so, what are you hearing?
Yes, I am hearing from constituents, and I'm hearing that it's frustrating, and I'm hearing that people's patience is running out, and I share that conviction. We need to have a logistics and distribution system in place that is robust enough to handle millions of these. I have confidence that we will. And the bottleneck that I am most concerned about is supply, because that is going to be the one that ultimately is the constraining factor here.
And so you're satisfied. I mean, we're hearing a lot of complaints today about the way the Commonwealth has stood up registration processes and distribution processes. You are satisfied with the way the Commonwealth's handling that now?
No, I don't think anybody who has participated in today's signups is satisfied. What I am saying is that when I look at the issues that are going to be the defining constraints for getting this population vaccinated in the next 6 months, I am much more concerned about supply than I am about logistics, because logistics, we are going to sort it out, and we're going to sort it out sooner rather than later. Supply is the one that is going to require really intentional work, because those issues are months long in the making and fixing.
All right, that is Jake Auchincloss, who represents Massachusetts' 4th Congressional District, newest member of our delegation. Great to have you, start to get to know you. I hope you'll come back again soon.
Much more, I hope.
Thanks. Starting today, Massachusetts residents 75 and older can schedule appointments for a COVID-19 vaccine. Or can they?
I'm trying very hard not to lose patience.
So that's Elaine Solomon. Elaine lives in senior housing in Northborough, and we spoke with her earlier today. She told us that trying to get an appointment through the state's website has been impossible.
Not only are there no appointments, I'm not eligible. Choose type of appointment, healthcare professional. That's the only thing that comes up. Where are the appointments? There's nothing there. I found that really frustrating.
And you can hear it in her voice there. Among others who are frustrated, State Senator Harriet Chandler, who tweeted that she personally has struggled to navigate the system and called the website, quote, simply ineffective, unquote. Well, the problems are on the radar screen of AARP of Massachusetts, which is calling on Governor Baker to make the process simpler, including a 1-800 number for folks without easy internet access. Mike Festa is the AARP Massachusetts State Director. He joins us now. Mike, welcome to Radio Boston.
Appreciate being on.
So I suspect that you are hearing lots of people like Elaine Solomon today.
We certainly are. I must say that this has been a reaction that even we didn't anticipate. It's been hundreds of phone calls, emails, comments on our Facebook. We have our own website. A universal concern that's reflected in the interview you just heard, and I would just add to that. What we're trying to, we recognize, let's just say what is obvious. This is a big undertaking for any government to do. We know that there's been a lot of ground up infrastructure to put together. There's all kinds of things that have implicated in how to do this effectively. But in the end, really what's going on that's most difficult to accept is the fact that there is a whole swath of population, certainly population in this cohort of 65 plus. And as you know, the governor recently moved priority of 65 up before lower. And so they're pretty much in that same target for the vaccines. But the simple truth is that with that having been done, we're left with the fact that many, many people have no access to internet at all. Some of them are not comfortable working internet, even if they are on it. And then I think the specific experience with this website, I think as an experienced person getting on this website, you're not going to find it unhelpful. But for the average person who's on that website for a very simple reason, I want to get a vaccine. Where do I go? What day? And how do I make the appointment? That's why they're on this website. And it should be very easy to navigate to get those answered. That lacks, and then the combination of the point you made, which is about the phone, which I'm happy to talk more about.
Yeah, so Mike, I do want to clarify for our listeners, just so they're clear. Right now, February 1st, the beginning of phase 2, age 75 and older can start receiving vaccinations.
That is correct. So let's be clear.
Right. And then 65 and older comes later in phase 2.
Yes, but right after 75, and that's actually a change from what had been the case. But yes, let's just talk about those 75 plus.
So let's hear a little bit from Governor Baker. He was on the defense in a press conference today, and here's what he had to say about helping older residents get appointments.
In addition to the website, our administration is working to create additional resources for residents to utilize to book their appointments, and is working with other public and private organizations that support our seniors across the Commonwealth. In the meantime, we would certainly urge family members and friends to help support older residents, help them book their appointments through that website if you can get that done for them.
So asking family members to kind of help fill the gaps, is that appropriate? And what do you want to see the administration do?
Well, I'm not going to say it's cringeworthy, but you have to admit it's a little bit of a tough message to tell people who are really anxious already about getting this vaccine. They're worried. They know friends and family and neighbors who actually have died. We got to remind ourselves that people 75 plus are in the bullseye of the most likely ones to be seriously impaired or die from this virus. So with all that emotion, I think the problem is that with all due respect to the governor, we certainly agree. I mean, we've been working behind the scenes with the administration on this very issue. But here's the problem. As we speak today, there is no way someone can pick up the phone and talk to a live person as an alternative to using a website and navigating, whether you have a daughter who's happy to help you or the, you know, the proverbial teenager that's better at this than anybody. That's not a perfect solution. So I would have to say right off the bat, yes, obviously these are anxious times that require some creativity and some assistance of family. It's not inappropriate, but is certainly not a complete solution. We think that live conversation is what a lot of our members at AARP and frankly, people 75 plus are comfortable with. And we also have to say that there is a whole host of folks either without internet access because of broadband, because they can't afford the internet. There are communities of color and other populations of people who are unable to afford, you know, internet, let alone use it. So these dynamics compel, I think, an appropriate response by the government to say, you know what, we're going to make sure there's infrastructure in place that allows folks to call and to help them do what everybody agrees is essential, which is get them that vaccine as soon as they're eligible.
And are other New England states doing that? Is there precedent for that around us?
Absolutely. In fact, it's an interesting point to be made. In Vermont, the brave state of Vermont of 750,000 people, they've got 500 live persons answering the phone to help people do this very thing. In New Hampshire, the number is 400. In Massachusetts, it's zero. And we at AARP are looking forward to sending a postcard to actually our 760,000 members as soon as we can tell them that in addition to going to either our website, which is also being refreshed every day to give them guidance, and then, of course, the government website we're talking about, but also, most important, to give them a phone number. We're not going to put that postcard out until there's a phone number because we know our members. And I think it's important for government always to understand where people are coming from, not how we think we should do it, but how they know as individuals using common sense is the way they do their work, do their business, and in this case, get a vaccine.
So, Mike, I want to go back to something you said a couple of minutes ago. You said we've been working behind the scenes on this with the administration. I think that is the question. We've known for months that the vaccine has been in development. Have organizations like AARP been working on planning for this rollout with the Baker administration? And do you know if the Baker administration was working on it with anyone else?
I do know that there is a vaccine advisory council or commission, council, I believe it was, that was put together. AARP was not part of that council. We were not asked to join that council. And, you know, I take no offense to that, but the simple truth is that the behind the scenes I'm referring to is a very recent vintage. And that is in the last 10 days when it first became apparent that they were only going to rely on the website to allow people to get their vaccine arranged. In addition to that, our initial efforts as an organization and my staff and myself talking to members of the Executive Office of Elder Affairs and Health and Human Services was to raise the concern around not having 65 plus people higher in the priority list. That was resolved last week. This other issue became very apparent. And what I would say is this, I mean, the people we talk with, we have the greatest respect for. They're good, decent, and they certainly want the same thing we want. However, the results speak for themselves. We don't have a phone number to call. People are really in a frustrating situation, not only because right as we speak, as the lady from Northborough said, you know, a lot of it's hard to get through. And then we're knowing that a lot of these sites are already filled up for completely or for weeks in advance. So it's a rollout that has major concerns for us as an organization. And we want to and continue to stand ready to constructively engage. As I say, when the time comes, if we have a number, you know, 760,000 AARP members anyway are going to get that information. And I think your, you know, what you're doing on the radio, what other media is doing and other organizations are doing is to promote that accessibility. But it's an incomplete solution at the moment. That's why we're urging the governor to make this a very high priority, because otherwise the barriers to getting full vaccination the way we want, certainly in this cohort of age, is just not going to be met.
All right. That is Mike Festa, the AARP Massachusetts State Director. Mike, thanks for joining us. We'll continue to
keep an eye on this.
All right. Before we go to break, our phones were open and we had a caller who wanted to call in and tell us their experience with registering today. So Jamie's on the line from Watertown. Jamie, go ahead.
Yep, I will keep it pretty brief. My son's in the back. But my 80-year-old father-in-law, we were able to get him an appointment, but we've been trying since midnight. And ultimately, it was a tip I found on Reddit to look at a specific site on the map that had some openings. So it was a very difficult process, even for people who are tech savvy. And I wish there was an option for people who aren't very good with the internet or who would prefer to make a call, honestly.
And Jamie, were you able to get an appointment soon and close to home?
Not close to home, but next week. Yeah, so we'll have to find a way to get him out into Western Mass safely.
All right. Well, Jamie, I'm glad you got an appointment, and thanks for calling and sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Thanks.
I don't know about you, but I am feeling some serious pandemic fatigue this week, and I miss those days of summer when I could just kind of get out of the house and enjoy nature. But it's not summer, it's winter, and it's messy out. But it's also a wonderland of its own, especially with new snow on the ground. So what to do and where to go, especially given limited budgets, schooling during the day at home, and social distancing. Our next guests, we have two. They have lots of suggestions, but we also want yours. This is the time to share tips with each other. What are you doing to shake the indoor blues outside? Do you have cheap or free, easy things to do in the winter in your community? Maybe you need to get the kids out to stretch their legs. What do you do to get them out there and get them enjoying this weather? Or maybe it's fitness for you, finding a way to run outdoors or do some other form of exercise. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to share your tips and secrets. So we have two guests. We're going to share theirs as well. Welcoming back Kiana Agbai, a Boston parent and author of the blog and Instagram account Harlem Lovebirds, and Mark Lowenstein, Chief Running Officer for Great Runs, which is a company that offers guides and tips for travelers who run and runners who travel. So Kiana, Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Great to be with you.
So I'm going to ask you both the same first question. Kiana, I guess I'll start with you. Are you spending a lot of time outside right now?
Not as much, but the snow falling is definitely an incentive. My kids are 6 and 10, so they were really excited to see the snow start to fall last night.
And are you a snow person, Kiana?
I am. I grew up in Ohio and came to Boston back in 1998. So I was really used to growing up in snowy weather. I think it's a lot of fun.
Mark, are you spending a lot of time outside right now?
Yes, I'm trying to spend as much time as I can outside. And in fact, a day like today, for those who like winter, is a bit of an A day because there's fresh snow on the trees. It's not too cold. The pavement isn't too slippery. So it was a really good day to get out there. We've had a few weeks of sort of that in-between weather, neither too warm nor snowy. So this was great for those who like winter.
And did you go for a snow run this morning, Mark?
I did. I attached little grippers to my shoes to make sure it wasn't too slippery. And it was absolutely beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful runs I've had in since the last time it snowed.
So I want to ask both of you. So Mark puts grippers on his shoes. He goes out and runs in this weather. Is that hardcore, or is that the sort of the fun we've all got to embrace in the middle of a pandemic and the middle of winter? What's your reaction, Kiana?
I think for me, at least as a parent, I think it's more of a fun way to engage. I think the parents kind of can take the lead, and the kids kind of follow our cues with our level of excitement for getting out. So for me, like with my six-year-old, as soon as he was done with his remote learning, he was itching to get his boots on and clobber me with some snowballs. So that's kind of the mode that we're in right now.
Let me just put the number out real quick, because we've got calls starting to come in, and I'll turn to them in a minute. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to share your sort of tips and secrets, fun places, free places to go in the winter in Boston or your community, ways to be outside and enjoy this weather. So, Mark, when you are out running, which I understand you do a lot, do you see people out there engaging in being outdoors in this kind of weather in ways that surprise you, where you think, huh, look at that, or that would be fun? I imagine you see people doing all kinds of things.
Yeah, I know I've seen more and more, especially, you know, during the pandemic, I think folks have been, you know, wanting to get outside a little bit more. It's a way of catching a bit of a radius beyond your home. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, with the guidance basically saying, you know, don't really have people who don't live in your household over to your house. It's a great way to catch up with friends, to go for you know, a nice long walk on the weekend. That's something we've been doing, meeting with friends on the weekend and trying to discover a new place, not too far from the city, just as a way of spicing things up. You know, variety is an important thing. It helps runners alleviate boredom by discovering a new place, but also just, you know, with the pandemic and a lot more sort of stay at home, it's a really nice opportunity to add a little bit of variety and relieve some of the boredom that's crept in during the pandemic.
And Kiana, you know, to Mark's point there, for kids, also a great opportunity to see friends they might not get to see or play with otherwise.
Oh, yes. We've been able to do drive-bys, seeing friends in that way. And I think also to the point of exploring a little bit more, we've taken our kids even, you know, out to the beach, out on Cape Cod, letting them see, you know, what does the ocean look like during the winter. And I think it's a great opportunity to explore regular places. I think even going to their schools, they're both remote learning this week. But for my son, who's in school in the community, it's been kind of fun to drive by and say, you know, what does the school look like right now? Or being able to walk around the neighborhood and explore how the snow makes things really beautiful.
And it is amazing to discover new areas. Like last weekend, just to give you an example, I've lived in Boston for over 30 years and have written, you know, running guidebooks, but I discovered a totally new huge area near where I live last weekend, the Lynn Woods. It's the second largest municipal park in the world. There's 30 miles of trails in there, including 10 miles of wide roads for running. It's beautiful, and hadn't known about it before.
And you can just look it up online, I'm sure, right? Lynn Woods.
Lynn Woods.
Awesome. Awesome. So calls coming in. This is fun. Let's go to the phones. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Our first caller is actually a friend of WBUR. We've got Miles Howard on from Jamaica Plain. Miles, I know you're a Cognoscenti contributor, and we had you on about a guidebook you wrote sometime in the last year, I want to say. So welcome back. What's on your mind with the call?
Thanks, Tiziana. Well, I'm a big hiker, as we talked about in the last segment there, and since there hasn't really been enough snow to do safe winter hiking in the Boston area lately, something I've really gotten into is using hiking apps like AllTrails to basically map like urban and suburban hikes where you get some serious mileage in and can discover really cool parcels of green space or trails that you might not even know exist right in your backyard but are actually findable on these maps. I'm actually using some of these apps to basically plan a multi-night walk across the state using mostly green spaces when it becomes safe to do that again. But for the interim, you know, you can look at everything from elevation gain to mileage and really get a hike-worthy workout right in your own backyard by, you know, jumping on some of these apps. So I found that really helpful lately.
And awesome, Miles, before we let you go, your favorite new, and we just heard Mark tell us about Lynn Woods, his favorite new location. Do you, in these hikes, have you found someplace new you particularly love?
You know, it's pretty close to home, but I've discovered the Great Meadows in Arlington, which have some really wonderful boardwalks that go into these deep wooded meadows that I used to ride by many times on the Minuteman bike trail, but I never knew there were trails back there. So that's a recent discovery of mine.
Fantastic, Miles. Thanks for the call. Kiana, I should ask you, any surprising new locations you've discovered with your kids? Although I admit I was struck by just take them back to the school in the snow and let them play on the old playground.
Yeah, I mean, we really like the Blue Hills and the fact that, you know, they do have skiing opportunities. My kids haven't been brave enough to give that a try yet. But even for hiking, the Blue Hills, you know, to have this on right on the edge of, you know, the southern outskirts of the city, it's a really great way for us to get out and do family hikes and explore together. And it's really fun, you know, the elevation and you trying to keep it safe with them. But depending on what protocols are in place, sometimes you can kind of get a little high and see the city, see the skyline from afar. And so it's really beautiful. And I highly recommend it.
Sounds fantastic. Let's grab another call here, 800-423-8255, to share your favorite outdoor winter activity. We've got Michelle on the line from West Yarmouth. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there. Thanks
what
for
you
taking
got
my
for
call.
Us?
So I wanted to share that it's not for everybody, but I have been doing polar plunges all winter long, and I would highly recommend it to anyone who's up for it. It's just such a burst of endorphins, and it's an all-consuming activity. Invigorates the senses. You get to be at the beach. Even though it's the wintertime, you can still get in the ocean. And usually there's a beach accessible to most people in eastern Massachusetts. So that's my recommendation.
Is it hard to get in the water, Michelle?
It always is. I've been going every single day, and I always get butterflies in my stomach walking down to the water. But every time I get in the water, it just feels so fantastic, and I never regret it. I always feel so much better afterwards. It's such a stress relief, such a balm for all the anxiety and tension and everything going on right now in the world. And lately, I've been actually taking people's dedications to the ocean with me, so people can let me know ahead of time if they want me to be thinking about their parents who are sick with COVID or any other issue. And that just gives it that extra element of deeper meaning. So it really makes it easier to get over whatever discomfort I'm feeling or anticipating.
Michelle, thanks so much for the call. And so I'm going to turn back to Mark Lowenstein here, Chief Running Officer for Great Runs. Mark, you know, Michelle is talking about this purging, self-cleaning quality of the bracing outdoors, of being physical and being active. Talk about that as a runner.
Well, you know, it's definitely, you know, invigorating, especially in the winter. I mean, even if it's not a polar plunge. And, you know, I think one way to, you know, be prepared for it is to make the right clothing choices. You know, so for example, for, you know, as a runner and walker, I have, you know, sort of clothing choices for different gradations and temperatures, sort of starting at, let's say, 40, then down to 30 and 20 and 10. And it's a lot of it is about layers. And one of the things I've discovered is if, you know, particularly if you're moving, it's that first, you know, in terms of just getting motivated to get out there, it's the first few minutes where you're really cold. But once you start moving, you get warm pretty quickly. And it's, you know, it's very mentally restorative, particularly with so much more time being spent, you know, indoors at home these days.
And are you finding, Mark, and then I'll go back to Kiana again, but Mark, are you finding in this pandemic when, you know, the natural rhythms of our lives and the natural human contact of our lives is so severely limited, are more people turning to fitness outdoors, to running outdoors as a way to just sort of keep it all together?
Absolutely. If you talk to folks who operate, you know, running stores like Marathon Sports or bike shops like Landry's in my hometown of Brookline, they were reporting record sales this summer. I mean, people who haven't run in a long time or gone on long walks are now sort of doing that and rediscovering it. There was a huge surge in biking this summer. In fact, there was a shortage of supply. If you wanted to buy a new bike in July, it was really hard to find one. And even now in the winter, I've heard the same thing about cross-country skiing. There's been a run on snowshoes and cross-country skis. It's actually hard to find some of these in some of the usual shops. So definitely it's been an opportunity for people to, you know, rediscover or discover anew some activities, particularly, let's face it, people aren't traveling in the same way. So when people are thinking about, you know, winter break coming up, you know, in a way that they might have, you know, been going to some warm weather spot, you know, they might not be this year. So they're thinking, okay, well, what's really interesting that's new and exciting near me. And it's going to be, if it's in New England, it's probably going to be something wintry.
All right, let's go back to the phones because I've got a caller here, Kiana, that I think is right up your alley. We've got Jennifer on the line from Hyde Park. Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, and hi, Kiana. We know each other from the neighborhood. Our children went to school together last year, and it's nice to hear you on the radio. I'm calling to just make a plug for scavenger hunts. They're a really fun way to engage kids in all of their senses outdoors. You can do something like ask them to look for special leaves, sticks, rocks, shells, something that's older than them, something that's alive, something that's dead. And I notice with my five-year-old that as soon as I say, hey, let's do a scavenger hunt, he's totally engaged and engrossed. And I would also put a shout out for the Stony Brook Reservation, which is a wonderful open space that's accessible to multiple neighborhoods in Boston as a great place to take kids for outdoor adventures.
Thanks for that, Jennifer. And Kiana, right, so many ways to engage your kids. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks, Jennifer, for calling in. I think it's really exciting sometimes just to let the kids fend for themselves, kind of throw them out there and see what they come up with and get some of that energy out. I think having the structured activities for my kids, you know, sometimes it's a hit or miss. I never know how they're going to respond, but sometimes it's really fun when I send them out. And one of the crucial methods to increasing their enthusiasm is promising them that there's going to be something warm and tasty when they return inside, which is usually homemade hot chocolate, which we've really been enjoying trying different homemade hot chocolate recipes. So if you can incentivize them, I think that definitely helps.
Yeah, well, it would work on me. All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. Let's take a couple calls here. We've got Lexi from Wilmington. Lexi, go ahead.
Hey, I'd just like to say this is a great topic. I appreciate the show today. I guess I have an odd place to go. I have a one-year-old who spends most of his time in the stroller, and I work full-time, so it's really hard to get out and find something new to do. And we've taken to walking in the town cemetery. It's paved, it's safe, it's peaceful, and that's kind of where we find ourselves a lot to get outdoors.
Oh, Lexi, excellent. And I just want to say, I actually love walking in cemeteries. You can do it respectfully. They're serene, peaceful, humbling places. There's history there. There's community there. What a great idea. Let's take Mia now in Salem. Mia, go ahead.
Hi there. So I'm actually a tour guide in Salem, and I found that the outdoor walking tours are a really great way to get in some physical activity, enjoy the outdoors, and engage your brain in a new way. And it's very safe and socially distanced. I know with my tours in particular, we have very small group sizes right now, and obviously, everyone's wearing masks and so on and so forth, so there's extreme precautions taken. Taking my own tours and also going and visiting coworkers when they do tours in other cities around Massachusetts has been
nice.
Really helpful for us.
Nice. Mia, thanks for that recommendation. Yeah, and I have taken walking tours in Salem. Again, being outside, learning our community's history, wonderful thing to do. Our director Zoe was just saying, hey, if you're one of the cemetery walkers, Mount Auburn Cemetery is a fantastic one. Is that unusual, Mark, to hear people say, I love to run these peaceful places like cemeteries or other outdoor spaces that we don't tend to think of as belonging to all of us?
No, it's not unusual. And in fact, I'll put a plug in for another wonderful cemetery for running, which is Forest Hills, which is sort of near Jamaica Plain and near Franklin Park. It's part near the Emerald Necklace. That's a really beautiful one. And it's a great way to just, overall to discover some hidden gems, in terms of a couple of spots that are favorites. East Boston, you wouldn't necessarily think of it, but there is a wonderful path that goes all the way from Bremen Park to the Hyatt Harbor side with incredible views of the Boston skyline. Another favorite for families is the Battle Road Trail, which is a restored historic trail that parallels Route 2A between Lexington and Concord. That's a real gem. It's operated by the National Park Service.
So many great suggestions there. We've got more calls coming too. Let's try to get at least one more. Arlene in Lawrence. Arlene, go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Even though Lawrence is a big urban area, we have a huge hill at the reservoir section in Tower Hill, and kids get up there with whatever they have, sleds or whatever, and slide down that hill, and it's always nice when the snow comes down.
Oh, Arlene, that's great. And Kiana, sledding. Do your kids sled?
Well, we moved here from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. We had like a 2-year hiatus before we returned to Boston. We're sledding in New Hampshire. We haven't gone sledding. Now that I think about it, we do have sleds, but we haven't gone sledding here in Boston proper. But I'm over here taking notes, and we'll have to listen to the replay for all the wonderful suggestions on sledding. But that's something that's really that we've done in the past. When my kids were a little bit smaller, we've done that.
And listen, I actually do want to say this to listeners, because Mark just gave us a fantastic list of places. Other callers had given us their favorites. This will be on our website, radioboston.org. About an hour after the show, the sound will go up. And so if this is, you know, if you want to listen to this part again and take notes on some of those locations, we will have that opportunity for you. Okay, so we've got maybe a minute left. Let me come back to you, Mark Lowenstein. Any other thoughts or advice for people who want to take advantage of this winter weather to just get their happy on again?
Well, I would say, you know, if you have time, like on a weekend or something, try to discover somewhere new or different that you haven't been to before. And, you know, there's great resources for that. We have a website called Great Runs, which has all sorts of route suggestions for the Boston area and other places, you know, nearby in New England. But there's many other resources and walking books and hiking books. It's just super helpful. And people, you know, you'll feel great if you go out and do it. And, you know, it's going to be a little chilly like this weekend, but it takes that a little bit of extra motivation, but you'll always be happy you did.
All right. Well, we are out of time there, so I'm gonna call it. That's Mark Lowenstein, Chief Running Officer for Great Runs, which is a company that offers guides and tips for travelers who run and runners who travel. We also have with us Kiana Agbai, friend of the show, a Boston parent, and author of the blog and Instagram account Harlem Lovebirds. Mark, Kiana, thanks so much. This was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, thanks for calling in with all of your wonderful secret and favorite places and ways you like to be outside in the winter. Lots to share with each other. That's the point, right? So thanks for that. And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Withman. Our engineer today is Marquise Neal. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.